Greetings from Podcastville. It's Monday, November 5th, bitches. Wash your feet and polish your fucking toenails. We're going in deep. It's the murky water deep. It's Thanksgiving. And then we roll on to Christmas. It's all over, but the fucking shot. But anyway, the Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by 23andMe. 23andMe is a personal genetic service that helps you understand what your DNA can tell you about you and your family story. As your loved ones get together this Thanksgiving, discover more about the genetic connections you share. Did you inherit your, you know, whatever your choice of law because of this from your mom or your dad? Or how much of your DNA is compared to your brother or your sisters? All these things will be answered with 23andMe. It's been named 23 pairs of chromosomes that make up our DNA. That's what it's named from. Now, do me a favor. Now through Thanksgiving, 23andMe, the Ancestry Service kits are only $49 per kit when you buy two or more kits. That's 50% off the regular $99 this holiday. So get one for you, one for your boyfriend. You do it, and you go to Thanksgiving, now everybody knows you're half a Puerto Rican, and you're beautiful, all right? Order your 23andMe Ancestry Service kit at 23andme.com/church, C-H-U-R-C-H. That's the number 23andme.com/church. C-H-U-R-C-H. I did 23andMe. I found out a bunch of things. Other beautiful people I love to talk about is ZipRecruiter. You know how I feel. Whether you have a small business, a big business, you're not too small and you're not too big because ZipRecruiter is there to help you. Okay? Number one, the job sites send you tons of the wrong resumes to sort out. That's not smart. There are job sites that make you wait for the right candidates to apply for a job. That's not smart either. You know what smart is? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. It's a powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes, identities, people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is number one by employers. So do me a favor. Right now, my listeners, the Church family, can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/church. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/church. I don't care how big a business, how small you are, I want you to have the right employees. So go to ZipRecruiter.com/church. And the Church would also like to bring back the famous, you ready for this one, bitches? Tushy.com. Hey, listen, it's Thanksgiving. You don't want to show up at your grandmother's with your asshole smelling like 10 dead billy goats, do you? No. Tushy.com is a portable
bidet.
You know what? I've smoked 22 joints already. It's a portable bidet. You install yourself in less than 10 minutes. I'm 300 pounds. Lee, I don't know what he is. Your bidet still working?
I use it every single day.
Every single fucking day. Dependable. They have like a money day guarantee, 60 day. You're not going to need it. If it could hold my fat ass, could you imagine what it could do for your fucking fat, smelly ass? Go to Tushy.com right now and log in and mention the word muffler and get 10% off. Who's better than Tushy? One more time, ZipRecruiter. One more time, 23andMe. And one more time, Tushy. Kick that fucking muley. There you go. Monday morning, cocksuckers. Uncle Joey, Felicia Michaels, the Christ Killer. Oh. TLC for you motherfuckers, early morning. It's a beautiful day to be alive. Oh shit. Oh shit. Here we go. Creeping with a cape on, slinging dick in the middle of the night and shit. This is what this jam's about right here. It's all over. You're home, you got your pajamas on, but mama calls, you know what I'm saying? You gotta put on your little fucking cologne, powder the nuts, take the ride down to 405, show up about 215 and show who the boss is. What? Kick it, Lee. Here it is.
So I creep, yeah, I
It's the church, bitches. Monday morning. Let's pick this right the fuck up. First off, as you and I both know, Felicia Michaels,
yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
That, as a veteran comic of 20 years, 50% of this comedy journey is not the hard work you put on stage. It's the relationships outside of comedy and the adversities that present themselves. That's what makes you a good comic. That's what makes you a good plumber. That's what makes you a good roofer. That's what makes you a good mechanic, is to, after 20 years, you know your craft so much that what's a pain in the ass for somebody else, you figure it out. That's what makes you good. But in this comedy journey, the craziness is the first 10 years. And the stick that has to be removed out of your ass for you to become a successful comedian.
Right.
Because you have to go into areas that you never dreamed of going to get a laugh. You never dreamed of, you know, that story you told me about sleeping at Dennis Leary's with the window broken.
Right,
and the snow
right.
was coming through the window.
Right.
You have to do things that are opposite your comfort zone altogether.
Absolutely.
To the point where you get creeped the fuck out. You and I were having a conversation before about the Comedy Store last year. At this time, every time I go to the Comedy Store, I get car sick. And then when I get to the Comedy Store, I have tons of anxiety because I knew Mitzi, and this is going to be in her, and I told Rogan, and I've been telling everybody, 10 years from now, like these idiots talk about Stanislavski and this guy, there's going to be a Mitzi Shore comedy guideline book that every comic is going to add one line to that. Mm-hmm. Mitzi said to them one night on the way in and how it applied to them. That's the book, you know, that's the book.
Right.
And it was so weird. The Comedy Store original room, for me to get a laugh in there how I want them to laugh, I have to go so far out of my comfort zone that it disturbs me. So I figured out after going back to the notebooks at night and reading, you know, because when I get home at night to decompress, I write a page. I force myself to write a page. Sometimes it's two pages. And I read the discomfort in my notes. And it was that I was being such a pussy, because I knew when you go to the Comedy Store, you got to go all in. You got to go all in.
Right.
You got to fake the funk. When you got, you have no cards in your corner and you got 10 million, you got to push that 10 million in and go, I'm in, and fake it. And hopefully the guy folds and look at you, you folded. That's what it's like.
Well, I remember when I was first at the Comedy Store, I think I became a regular in 1985 or 86, and Pryor used to come in. And he would go in on a Tuesday night, and he would be so fucking terrible because he's trying all new stuff. But as a new comic watching it, and people would walk out, it would be so fucking terrible. And you'd literally be like, this is the great Pryor. But just by being fortunate enough to be at the Comedy Store and to see Tuesday night, then go back Wednesday night and see him do the same material but tighten it up and so it's not as bad, then go Thursday. But just to see the process of what Pryor did to get something ready, and that he had to emotionally dig himself some big fucked up hole all the time to get to that, you know, show on Friday night where it was fucking smooth as butter. You know what I mean? Like, it was a process that that he did, and to be able to see someone like him do it, it gives you comfort. You know what I mean? And I think when you're speaking about the half of the part of comedy that's not just working on your act, it is hanging out with other people and seeing what other people are struggling with or seeing how other people are doing it. And sometimes you're not even ready to do it. Like when I left comedy and came back, I took a class, a joke writing class with Gabe Abelson at fucking Flappers, right? Just because I was like, oh, I need, you know, my jokes are kind of sloppy, whatever. And it changed my life because he was like the head writer at Letterman for like 10 years. But to learn the like real structure of how to write a joke, I don't necessarily do that all the time. But it totally changed my act. And it took how long to fucking be able to be open enough to listen to someone else give advice? You know, but that's all the process of it and the friendships you make. You know what I mean? To think the people you started out with, how you fucking hated them or you had some stupid ass beef, that 20 years later, those people are going to be the people that give you a hand to lift you up. Or, you know what I mean, say something so kind when you thought they were being a piece of shit and it was totally yourself projecting. But all of that, learning all of that, Lee has to go through it now.
I learned a lot this week, you know. Again, I want to thank you people who watched the special and degenerates and supported me
so
on Netflix.
So good, Joey.
it's really weird the reaction I've gotten from people. Like, I had a long conversation with Neil Brennan, and I pulled him aside and told him that, you know, between him and John Mulaney, that's what you aspire to be as a comic, you know, real precise joke writers. And whenever I go out of my comfort zone, sometimes I try to be like those guys and I eat a bag of dicks, you know? And I told him that. I go, if I wrote like you, and then the other flip side, he goes, if I could perform like you, then I'd take the fucking, you know what I'm saying? So everybody has holes in their game. Everybody, you know.
Bring something different to it.
Bring something different to the table. But it's so weird how we were just laughing about something. I don't know. Lee just said something on how Lee is in for the journey of his life because Lee's very anal. Lee's very anal, you know, and he has to, and he doesn't know that to fully immerse yourself in the world of comedy, it's, you go against your beliefs sometimes. You go against that stuff you learned when you went to Israel. Little things that you keep sacred, you're going to have to put aside. If not, you're not going to grow as a comic. Mm-hmm. Things that you know might not like to do, things that it's so weird how that part of the journey makes you also. Like, it makes you also. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, just,
well, you have to live your life in order to report on your life.
Yes.
Like, sometimes with comedy, you can get so anal and so into it, and so, I just want to do this, that you put your personal life to the side. But you have to live your life. I mean, I hate to be lame like that, but there you go.
I didn't live a life for 10 years. I just thought about comedy. But I also was doing drugs and whatever, you know. My goal was this, to do, you know, a couple sets a night. And after that one set, that's when the party starts.
Right.
And who's ever there, that's who you go home with. And, you know, whatever. You wake up in the morning and say, hey, I gotta go. And nobody knows nothing the next day. And, you know, it's weird. It's a weird thing in the beginning. You know, like how... Just you live your life like a nomad. A lot of people can't live their life like nomads. They need structure. But I always had structure as a nomad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing. If you're going to be a nomad, you still have to have structure.
Mm-hmm.
I forced myself to have structure when I was a nomad. And then when I first got to the store, my structure was two phases. It was cocaine and comedy. You ever hear of M&M's? Minus C and C's. That's it. That's all I thought about.
Right.
How to score, how to keep my rent paid, and how to do comedy every night. That was my focus. You know, and it's so... I don't regret it at all. I had a great fucking time. If I had to do it all over again or work in a fucking something I didn't want to do,
right,
I'd take the same route all over again. I enjoyed sleeping in my car those 3 months. I enjoyed sleeping on Ralphie's floor. Like, if I could do it again, I'd do it again.
Right.
You know, there was this comic that... He was one of the first comics to have a CD out. And he was horrible. And one night he gave the CD to Ralphie. And at night we used to have a running joke. Everybody tired, put on that comic CD. And we'd all fall asleep to it. Like every night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'd all fall asleep to the same CD.
Right.
Instead of somebody reading you a bedtime story, it was this comic CD. And we were all like... Man, I slept rough last night. That CD put us right to bed. Like all those.
Jesus.
But it isn't even, like, I still remember getting on stage with suits on.
That you wore suit? Oh, because you used to wear a suit all the time?
For 3 months.
You did that?
For 3 or 4 months, I always got on stage with suits on for 4 months. It lasted 4 months. And out of the 4 months, I went on stage probably, let's say, 16 times. A month with the suit on 4 times a week, and I would bomb 5 times a week with a suit on. There was something about a suit that put a block on me. And one day I said, I'll never wear a suit again, because I saw Lenny Clark wear a suit on Rodney Dangerfield's special. He came out with a nice suit up front.
Right, right.
So I said, I'm going to emulate him and wear a suit like him. But it was so weird. As soon as I took the suit off, I started getting laughs.
Interesting.
Like, once I got down to the level of who I am, because you can't put a silk hat on a pig.
Right.
And people read through it when I put a suit on.
Well, when I was younger, and I know this sounds so dumb, but when I used to wear high heels, I would never have a good set. Because if I had, like, high heels, in the day, it was, like, mini skirts and high heels. And it's just, like, because it didn't feel grounded. It felt like you were out to fuck. You know what I mean? Like, and people wouldn't buy it. And I didn't feel, and I think because I didn't feel comfortable in it. But as soon as I didn't care, then it got better. You know what I mean? It's funny because you don't know when you're starting out, you know, how to go about it, how to figure it out.
I want a person to feel comfortable on stage. Like when I see a woman with heels on stage, it's tough for an hour to stand there. I feel it when I'm looking at her. Like I'm saying to myself, I wonder what she's got in her feet moving around like that. Fucking, you pull a Madonna or Beyonce. Because all those bitches have fallen one fucking time. Yeah. They're all falling. I would hate to see a comic fucking fall like that. But I couldn't imagine going, I like to be grounded also.
Right.
I like sneakers up on stage. No flip-flops, no nothing, no shorts, jeans, t-shirt.
Yeah, no big patterns.
No, if you're up front, you got to wear a college shirt if you're the MC.
Right. Just, Margaret Cho told me you always have to wear one fucked up thing. One stupid thing.
A scarf.
Yeah, something dumb.
A hat.
Yeah, something goofy.
You know, it's so weird. I've had the same hairdo since I was a kid. Like, everything's the same.
You had the same hairdo since you were a kid?
Yeah. Like that.
Was your hair always greased back?
Well, before grease, it just went up in the air.
Right, okay.
You know, I just combed it, and it would just go up in the air from the humidity. And then I started putting grease in my hair when I moved to, like, Boulder or something. Once the humidity was gone, I just had to calm it down, so. But it's the same fucking hair, dude. Like, there's no change. There's been no evolution in my dude.
Did you do a mullet? Did you ever do a mullet?
All the time. I love
you
mullets.
Did a mullet?
I still have like a half a mullet. I mean, the guy's like, really? I go, yeah, leave the length. Just cut off the bushings. If not, my fucking ears look like, you know, like they're fucking targets. If you don't leave a little bush in the back, my ears look like fucking targets. So what are you going to do? No, I don't believe in that whole dress up comedy. I want you to be up there yourself. When I see somebody dressing up to do comedy,
right,
it kind of bothers me a little bit. There's some people who doesn't bother me.
Well, John Mulaney, doesn't he?
No, he looks good.
Yeah, he looks sharp.
He looks good. I like.
But he looks comfortable in it. That looks like what he would wear to the grocery store.
I like the tiny girl when she wears furs and gloves on stage.
Natasha Leggero?
Yeah, I like all that
shit. She looks nice when she dresses up.
I like all that shit. Yeah, I like all that shit. She's, you know, yeah. Some people are meant to sell it. Some people are faking the funk, you know, and that's it. Once I see anything in the comics armor that fakes the funk, I can't pay attention to them. And that's really hard to be who you are at that level. I don't know. It's just weird, you know. It's like when, I don't know. I don't want to get myself in a hole here. No, but you don't even like prop comics. Like,
Right.
But you don't see prop comics no more, right? You
know. I know. Remember when that was a thing? It's crazy, right?
You don't see a lot of musical comedy no more?
Yeah. Well, sometimes you'll see still guitar comedy here and there, but not like it was before.
Besides Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
Who else?
Yeah.
Who else plays the guitar anymore? The one guy that used to
do. There's a couple girls that do. Esther Koo sometimes does.
Does she? I think she played the ukulele.
Yeah, sometimes, every great once in a while. I haven't seen her do it in a while, though.
I haven't seen Esther Koo, period. I hit her up on Twitter the other day. Is she in town?
She's been around, yeah. Yeah, she's so funny.
But I see you're getting spots.
I'm starting to get spots again at the Comedy Store.
But let's start from the beginning of this.
Right.
This is really weird. Years ago, you came to me and said, hey, you said that fucking Miserable told you that you weren't going to get spots at the store no more. This is the guy before Adam, Tommy.
He who shall not be named.
I could give a Frenchman's fuck.
Yeah, because I had quit comedy for a while, and then I went back, and I was hanging out a little bit, and I was like, hey, so, you know, do I come on Mondays and try to get on, friends and family? Well, like, how do I go about this? And he looked at me, and he was just like, we don't book any of the old guys here. But it made me laugh because it was like, that's fucking bold, bitch. You know what I mean? I was like, all right.
I wasn't even a regular. I was a regular at the store, but I wasn't going to the store.
Right.
When you told me that, I was like, this guy has gone fucking crazy, you know?
Why did you stop going to the store?
I stopped going to the store because of... I stopped going to the store because of a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I got the surgery on my neck, and they took the fat ball out. And the fat ball, as soon as I saw it, looked like a ball of hate. And just, you know, it was like this. And the Cubans are very superstitious. They call it Mandeo. There was just a lot of reasons. I had done my tenure there.
Right.
You have to know in life when you... I never want to be kicked out. I want to walk on my own 2 feet.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
At that time, I saw the guard changing a little bit. Mitzi started getting old. I had already been there, like I said, since 97, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it was 2006. And I just noticed little things. I heard little sayings. People would say things to me about Rogan in a negative way, but trying to be cute, offhanded.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy was one of the first people that ever came up to me while Rogan was on tour with Eddie Murphy's brother and John Heffron and Tom Segura and those guys. Joe was gone for a long period of time, and I was up there one Thursday night or something. And him and another guy that remained unnamed came up to me, and they're like, "Where's your buddy tonight?" Like trying to like when you're in high school, like where's your butt buddy? Like Rogan,
right? Right.
He's on tour, and he goes, "Oh, I didn't take it." You know, like they were like busting my balls, and they said, "Just to let you know, when he comes back, things are gonna change around here. He's not gonna be able to do 45 minutes and stuff." And I'll never forget that I did my spot, I got my car, and I went home. At the time, Terry didn't work there no more, so I wouldn't have caused a beef for the family or nothing. So I just went home and made a mental note. And when I came down from the drugs the next day, I saw it wasn't a mental note. I saw that it was a declaration of war in my fucking paranoid cocaine mind, and that I had not done anything about it. If that was me 20 years early, I would have banged both their fucking heads together. But I was so addicted to the coke, and my brain was so gone at the time, that I didn't know what they were saying to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were threatening me, like in a cute way, like two buddies. 20 years ago, I would have sidekicked one guy and hit the other guy in the head with a bottle and just drove away. But my addiction calmed me down. Like, I was like, I'm not going to do nothing. I'm just going to go home. But right then and there, I go, you know what? Before I end up in jail, before this goes down, I'm just going to stop going up there. Something. I go, first of all, how fortunate am I that Mitzi sure picked me to be a regular? That's number one.
Right.
I'm way ahead of the game there. And for the last 7 years, she's been giving me spots. So if you start in, what's the club I like in Providence? The Comedy Connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great little club. It seats 250. If you walk in there on a fucking Sunday night and do the open mic spot, and then you do the open mic every night and you put work in, after 7 years, that'll be your home club. And
right.
By that time, you'll be co-headlining the room.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, the owner's going to come up to you and go, "Lee, I really like you. I know that your father's ill. I know that you take care of your mom. But for this career to go anywhere, you got to get out of Providence. You got to move on." So it's like a 7-year window that you have at a club before you have
right.
to move on.
And the thing is, when you're at the Comedy Store, it's such a privilege to be there. You know, it's a mind fuck in its own way because it's, you know, you're trying to learn your craft, right? And it's such an amazing thing to be there. But if it's your home club, at a certain point, you have to fly, like what you're saying.
And it's so weird, the turn of events, because it happened right around this time, 11 years ago. It happened in 2007. So I had the surgery that January. And after that January, boom, Rogan gets the whatever. There's a little drama at the store. I was a little upset. Things weren't working out how they wanted at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I did a big motion feature and nothing happened. But the truth of the matter is my addiction was at an all-time high. Like, I was going nuts. Like, I wasn't even hanging out with the people I was getting hooked with no more. I was way beyond that level. I was doing 3 grams a night, 6 in the morning. Terry would be waking up, and I'd be going to bed type shit. You know, that type shit. And I had already known. I'm like, I got to get out of this store. Like, I have to get out of the store. And I remember the tour finished for Rogan. And one night at the store, Rogan put me up before him. And when we got off, I pulled him aside and I go, let's give this place a break because something's going to go down here. And he goes, no, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And a couple of weeks later was when the seed was planted for the whole Carlos Mencia.
Oh, really?
So the whole Carlos Mencia seed was planted in December. I was already pulling back.
Mm-hmm.
I had already known what was going on. But something else happened that was interesting. Marilyn Martinez died.
Right.
Her anniversary was yesterday, 11 years. So at that time, I was clean from coke for like 7 or 8 days. I don't know the exact amount because I was shooting a movie. I booked a movie and the guy told me that he knew I was a fucking coke fiend, that if I was going to take the movie, I had to stop doing blow because I was going to fuck up the production schedule. So that's why I quit doing blow. Then I went up to the store and I blew up by Jeff Valdez at the wake. And I said, that proves it, that I don't need to be at the store no more. That's right, the proof right there. I'm too old. I've lived this life already. I know when I'm volatile.
Right.
And I know when I don't belong somewhere. And that night I knew when I went home in the car, I'm never going back up to the store. I called Rogan again. About 5 days later was when I got the call from the seed getting planted for the whole Carlos thing. I didn't take the bite. I didn't take the bite. So they had other people. They deployed other people to put blood into Joe.
Mm-hmm.
In January of 2008 is when Joe went off on Carlos. It was around that January after the Super Bowl commercial. Carlos had a Super Bowl commercial. So the tension started in December. Now the new year, people calm down. People have new resolutions and shit. Now it's the Super Bowl. And who's got the third commercial on slate? Carlos Mencia. Well, guess what? Everybody saw that. And the hatred came to a boil. And maybe 2 weeks later, tortured him up on stage at the Comedy Store. And then a week later, Joe gets banned.
Yeah.
So I saw the heat coming. I saw how they were going to twist it around. I got the first call to be the first fucking Judas. But I wouldn't buy it. I said, no. If Carlos is on stage, I don't give a fuck. If somebody's on stage, I don't give a fuck who's on stage and Carlos walks in, Carlos gets to bump that person. That was how they called me. They called me to ask me my opinion on what I thought about Carlos or Eddie Griffin walking into the store. And I said, here's my rule. My rule is I'm a peon. If I'm in the back of the room, if I'm on stage and I see Paul Rodriguez, Paul Mooney, Richard Pryor, at that time, the guy who died, Larry Sanders, what's his name?
Gary Shandling.
Gary Shandling used to come in when I first got
down there. Right, yeah, he used to come in there a lot.
Mo Mandel, what's his name? Howie Mandel. Eddie Griffin, Andrew.
Yakov.
Did no, he come at that in time, there? Yakov had no, Missouri. Really? He was running.
Arsenio by that time.
Once in a while, the Wayans could bump. Yeah,
yes.
And Damon could bump. Yeah. That was an understanding. So as soon as you saw them, you were like, fuck.
Yes.
Like if you had 11:45 and you saw Damon, you were fuck. And then if you saw Damon with the 10 brothers, you were doomed because that's it. They were doing a variety show. You're doomed. Your agent is there.
Damon
your grandmother
used to do
flew
the
in
the invisible comedian. Remember when he did the invisible comedian?
No, you have no idea.
Oh my God.
So your spot's at 11:45. You have an audition at 10. And Damon Wayans are walking with the whole family, with the older brother, the creator of In Living Color, and the two younger brothers. And you would just sit there and go, oh my God, I'm dead. Mm. And one night, there was a kid that went on, Keenan Ivory Wayans was on stage at the store. And Thomas Ward said, why don't you get off the stage and let some funny black dudes go up? He didn't say it that way. He said it in a more rough way.
More rough.
Yeah, he said it in a little bit more rough way. He was black. He's allowed to say it.
Okay.
The words he was allowed to say. And Mitzi banned him for 30 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Keenan was up on stage and he was supposed to go up next. You know, people's fucking him. After a while, when you got
that was
a lot,
rough, man.
Think of being 11:45 and getting bumped 5 nights in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
And your spot's now at 12:38. And you got a rock of coke in your pocket, burning a hole in your pocket. you got a chick that's ready to suck dick, but you could leave. You could leave. You always had the option to leave and be a fucking mutt, or you could stay and learn something. Go in there, get pissed off, and watch this guy, and then watch him die for 10 minutes, and then watch him turn the room around, and you go, why? That's why he's a fucking star.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the brilliant thing was. When you got bumped, I used to get bumped all the time. I used to go down there early on a Saturday and try to get that 8:45 spot. Nobody would be there. And I'd just be ready to walk up, and Gary Shanley would walk in. God damn it.
Yep.
Motherfucker. Well, you got to come down and shit. And there you are at 11:30. And then Dice would come in, and he'd do an hour.
Oh, yeah.
See, at least now, if you bump, you're only allowed to bump by 20 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't do, they let you know right off the bat.
Yeah.
There's a very strict rule now.
Yeah.
When you see that light, you got 2 minutes, bitch. And get
so
on.
Was Tommy the one that was in charge when that whole Carlos thing went down?
Yes, yes.
Right.
He was one of the instigators in to try to get another comic ahead. It was just a weird thing. It could only happen at the Comedy Store. At that time, it's such a fucking weird thing to call it, but the talent coordinator was such a weird name for these people. Because all they did was put Mitzi's, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
They would tell Mitzi was available. They would fax the list back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and the position of talent coordinator could be a fucking blessing or it could be a curse. Lee, you don't know what it is to get tortured. You don't know what it is to be the talent coordinator at the Comedy Store. When people tell you you lost weight, you look great, they start giving you spots in their rooms. If they pay everybody else $50, they give you $75. You know, the talent coordinator is a rough position if you're a comedian.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could eat you alive. I saw it eat somebody alive. I saw it eat a couple people alive. And it could eat you alive if you're not a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still get that power.
Right. For sure.
That power in L.A. to be the talent coordinator.
But then it's like, how do you, when you're in a position, whatever job you're doing, where someone could totally change your life, but then you kind of like that person, but you don't want to kiss ass. That's where I always get all fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, how do I approach this person? Usually I just leave people be, and then people think I'm not friendly because I feel like, fuck, everybody wants to suck their dick. Why should I get on this?
There's two rules to this.
Yeah.
There's two rules, and it's plain and simple. A, be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And B, be funny.
Right. Yes, yes.
If you do those two rules, you got no beefs with nobody. It's when you go out of that thing. There's people who, they're not slick.
Uh-huh.
They're not slick.
Well, wouldn't it be obvious if, like, someone, like, I imagine that, like, it's like an entourage. Like, if they're just, like, let's say I was the talent coordinator, but then they switch a lot. So what if I got fired and then suddenly you're talent coordinator and all those people are kissing up to you? Like, isn't it other people who just switch from person to person?
Brother, listen. We were talking about it when I went to Providence, and Danny Kelly, you know I love you, and I'll tell the story. I was Danny Kelly's roommate when he was... And I've told this on the podcast before. There was two things I observed early on. The Josh Wolf development deal and the Danny Kelly situation. I was very fortunate. I knew it existed in the world. I knew it existed in the world I came from, but I'm a fucking criminal. I'm a criminal. But I didn't know it existed in the comedy world. And in the comedy world, it's worse than in the criminal world. Because in the criminal world, I know where you stand. I know you're dangerous. I know you're a fucking thief. I know you cut your fucking drugs. I know you don't pay your bills. I know if you carry a knife. With these people, you don't really know where they stand. That's why guys like Harvey Weinstein were created.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know where the fuck you stand with these guys. The power goes to a different level. You know, Harvey Weinstein in the beginning was a nice guy. He would take a look at you, maybe, you know what I'm saying? Towards the end, if you read some of that stuff.
Right.
It was just straight to the sucking and fucking, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he just got that powerful.
Well, I'm sure every time moving the little line, you know,
it's like me looking in the mirror and mm-hmm. going, I'm going to meet Scarlett or whatever her name is at lunch, and she's going to suck my dick.
What?
Like, you have to be fucking crazy to be a guy like me and think that Scarlett Johansson is going to suck your dick because he just invites you to, that's a reality.
Right, right.
Because he just invites you to a hotel.
Yeah.
Like, you think about how powerful he got in his mind, how the power just ran the fuck away with him.
Right.
So that's at every level in Hollywood. Now we got Les Moonves. Now we have, these aren't bad guys. These aren't guys that started out like this. These are guys that got a powerful position handed to them, and they figured out they had a fucking ace in their pocket at all times.
Right.
And you go in there with a dream. You don't want to go back to fucking Topeka, Kansas as a loser, at least, you know what I'm saying? So there's just so many variables to this. Now, we break it down to comedy. When I first got to the Comedy Store with Scott Day, he was a serious guy and I was serious with him. I zero kissed his ass. Mm-hmm. Zero kissed his ass. I asked him for advice. He was my friend and I respected the hell out of him. And he's probably listening to this podcast right now. But he really was great at what he did. He listened to Mitzi, and him and Mitzi put together great lineups. Then after that, they came and they went. And I saw what the position did to some of the guys. Some of the guys abused women. Some, you know, whatever happened, happened. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the fuck happened, happened. But that's such a weird spot to have. I was Danny Kelly's roommate. Here I was busting my hump. Fucking, you know. Going on the road with Rogan a little bit, doing spots at the store, following.
And Danny Kelly lived here in L.A.?
Yes. Okay. And then me and the stripper broke up.
Okay.
So Danny Kelly and
from his, Washington?
From Seattle, yeah. Oh,
okay.
And Danny Kelly and his girlfriend broke up. And Danny Kelly lived across the street from Rock and Roll Rouse.
Okay.
So it's that hotel.
Right.
Across the street
mm-hmm.
and behind the printing place.
Is that where Josh Wolf lived too?
No. Okay. Josh Wolf lived north.
Okay.
Towards Corsland. This was in a building that had a jacuzzi and a pool.
Uh-huh.
So he had a one bedroom. So he gave me the bedroom and he stayed in the living room. And I just slept on my clothes and on a duffel bag. Mm-hmm. Like, the duffel bag was my pillow. There was no sleep apnea machine then. There was nothing. There was a blanket I had, a half a blanket. But there was a calendar on the wall. And it was his calendar. And I remember looking at that calendar every morning and going, how the fuck is he getting these gigs? And he just wasn't getting gigs. He was getting gigs and headlining them. I mean, you know, the Ventura Club before it was this club.
Right.
There was a room in Orange County.
And how did he get them?
He was a talent coordinator at the store.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So everybody would call him. You're the funniest guy in the world. Come on down. Come on down. And Danny was a funny guy. You know, he was a great guy.
Right.
And then one day, Mitzi found out about some shit that was going down, and she fired him. I mean, he walked into work, and his stuff was in a fucking box.
Right.
And they said, you're not even allowed to go upstairs. And he went home that afternoon. He was a little cracked. He ate dinner, and he got a spot at the Improv. In those days, you know how hard it was to get a spot at the Improv on a Monday night?
Yeah.
It was the hottest night in Hollywood. It was a Freaky Monday. And it was their version of a black night. And from 8 to 8:40... it was Hot White Axe, with the comic at 8:40 being Dave Attell or Pablo Francisco.
Right.
And then after that, it just went black. He was getting spots there, which is a huge night in those days. So he gets fired from the fucking comedy coordinator's job on a Monday. He heads to the Improv. Nobody really knows he got fired yet. He goes on stage. He does his first joke, and the power goes out in the building. The whole building went down. And he stayed up there for a few minutes with a lighter. But he knew, like, God had sent him a lightning bolt. And he got home within 2 days.
Uh-huh.
You would see the slashes in the calendar from the canceled work.
Right.
Oh, we're not doing that gig anymore. And I remember him going, I lost 3 more gigs today. I lost 4 more gigs today. And I saw a decline of a man that, how creepy this town is when they want something from you, you know. So right there, I learned my biggest lesson, that they always come dressed as whatever. And they always come, they're wolves dressed in sheep's clothing.
Right.
I mean, he was getting gigs that people were dreaming of like local gigs that paid $1,000. In those days, $1,000, I'd suck your dick for $1,000. $1,000. Are you crazy?
Right. Wow. That's a... Well, I think the biggest lesson, though, like when you're starting out, is you have to have your fingers in a couple of different bowls, don't you think? You can't... Like, I've seen a lot in my time in comedy where people who have stuck only with one person and have never ventured out, that sometimes is not good, too, either. You know what I mean?
What do you mean, venture out?
Just like... you know, like they'll only do gigs in one club, or they'll only, you know what I mean? They won't hang out with different types of comics. They only hang out with their group. Because, you know, people always go in their group, right? There's you, the Rogan group, right? There's like Chick Comedy group. There's, you know, all sorts of different groups. But the best thing that I have been happy about in my career is I've been able to hop around in a lot of different groups, because I think it's important, because it makes you grow.
I go in... 27 years, you know, I'm friends with a lot of comics.
Mm-hmm.
I see him, I give him a big hug. I'm happy for the success. We're still in this fucking thing. We're still living in this fucking town.
I know.
You know, we're fortunate. There's all that stuff. But there's also the thing, like I was telling you at the house before, what I know is good for me, you know. After I shot the Netflix special, I saw 10 million holes in my game. I really did. It's the weirdest thing.
You're saying after you shot it, but hadn't seen the finished product.
Even before I saw the finished product.
Yeah.
I knew I had holes in my game. And I thought about it for a week. And I read some of my writings that I had written at night. And I figured out where the trigger was. See, because I write, instead of paying for a fucking psychiatrist, I just write on a piece of paper and I read it back weeks later. And I just had fear. Fear was starting to come back in my life. Fear of going to the store. Not fear of following people. Nothing that stuff. Just fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I got lazy. I'd rather go to this club or this club or this club. And you sit in the back and you ask yourself, what the fuck am I doing here? I could be at the Comedy Store and I'm sitting here with the fucking Bringer Show or this shit. And that's where I ventured out and I didn't like the results. So for me to be the animal... that I need to be in the original room once or twice a week as a tune-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the main room, like, once or twice a week. Like, this week I did 5 spots. That's my weekly goal if I don't go on the road.
Right, right.
So I pop 2 Tuesday, 2 Thursday, and maybe 1 on Saturday.
Can I ask you, when you shot your Netflix one, because I know you had said to me that you weren't that happy with it right after you shot it. What were the 3 top holes that you... Because when you were telling me that, I couldn't even believe it, because I just know you as a performer. What did you feel like were the holes?
The holes were... Hole number one. I depended too much on the material.
Yeah.
You never depend on your material. Your material depends on you. That was the first fucking hole in my game. You never depend on your material. Your material depends on you. And then if you see an opening, you attack it. I was playing my game too safe. I'm an attacker. I have to attack. I have to agitate and then go in for the kill.
Mm-hmm.
If not, I'm not going to rally you. I forgot all those skills. And those are the skills you pick up at the fucking Comedy Store when you follow Paul Mooney at 12:45.
Yeah.
I always tell comics the biggest gift is when you show up and you have to abandon your material. You just wrote 8 minutes on the most brilliant documentary you see, but the guy in front of you is doing that same documentary.
Right.
And there's nothing like bailing on your material and finding the strength that you have. Sometimes we don't have to believe in our material that much. We have super fucking strengths that we forget to use, and I forget to use them.
But the original room is such a different animal. Like, I've been doing a lot of late night spots and...
When you go up, how many people are in the room?
It all varies. It can be like 20, or it can be, you know, 40. It's mostly scattered.
Which is groups of
guys. It's
which
mostly
is completely
groups
different
of guys.
Than everybody
yeah.
sitting
yes.
together.
Yes.
So that's a different type
right.
of attack. Okay?
Yeah.
That's a different type of attack, because you got to attack at the 2:00, at 12 o'clock
right.
and at 10 o'clock. So you got to keep attacking and taking little steps. And then sometimes you have to actually go from 2 o'clock to 10 o'clock. It's a tremendous
right
body movement because they're all over the place.
And some of those people have been there since the beginning. And then you know they've heard every yes. variation of every, you know, person ever. And but then, and it goes in and out. Like, I was there for Halloween, and I felt like I lived three different lifetimes waiting for my spot. Like, I had three nights in one at the Comedy Store on Halloween. And I went up at, like, 1:15, you know. But it's, you can, you're, with the original room, you can never plan what you're going to do. You can never plan what you're going to do.
There you go. That's what I like about the original room.
Yeah.
If I ever get any other type of special again 6 weeks prior, I'm just doing four nights at midnight.
Right. In a row.
Four nights put me up at midnight. When if you really like Joey Diaz, you got to hang out, which you're not going to hang out till midnight, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Have you watched your whole special?
No.
No?
No.
Have you watched any of it?
A couple minutes.
Yeah. It's really good, Joey.
And I'm too embarrassed.
No.
So I just turn it off. Because I don't want to watch it because not yet. I'm not ready for it yet. I'll be ready for it eventually and I'll watch it. I'm not ready for it yet. Let the toll, you know.
Do you think you were projecting a lot of negativity on it because you were in a vulnerable space when you shot it? Because I recently did a gig at the Writers Guild and like Bill Burr was on it. Ida Rodriguez was on, like all these comics were on it. And I was so nervous because it was in front of all the writers at the Writers Guild. And I was second one on. I had to follow Yang. What's that gentleman's name? In Crazy Rich Asians. Oh, Yang. Anyway, sorry, I can't remember his name. But I was so nervous. And I went up and I did my thing, but I was a little bit too precious. But I did solid. But it's when you are so afraid to play a little bit, you know what I mean? Because you're just like, I don't want to fuck this up because, you know what I mean? Because everybody's here and, you know, and you get so precious with it that I was totally beating myself up as I got off the stage. But in reality, I had a good set. You know, do you think you were projecting a lot because you were being too protective of staying in order of your material and trying to be too organized with it?
I did comedy for fucking, I don't know, 15 years before anybody noticed. And then from time to time I pick up a little fucking gift. But this was different. This jump was different. This now depends. I have a wife and a child that needs to eat, so that Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce aspect of my comedy that I really enjoyed. What's going on, lady? We good?
Something's going on. I'm sorry.
You what?
Something just during the podcast. Something's going on. Hold on.
Is it working? Is it taping?
Yeah.
Oh. So what? That whole Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor thing left from my mind, and that Kennison thing, and that Dice thing, because now I have audiences that pay for babysitters, they pay the park, they pay for a ticket, they pay for two drinks, and they come see me. I do not want to take a chance and for that chance to go down a foxhole, and it doesn't work.
Right.
So I started playing my cards too tough. Guess where I was doing that at also, at the Comedy Store. Because I know that people come from overseas and they go to the Comedy Store and they check in and they want to see different comedy every Tuesday night. So I let my mind take over. That's where the anxiety attacks were coming from. They were coming from within because I was starting to get sick. By the time I passed the general store on the way down Laurel Canyon, I'm already getting sick.
No, I know. One time we're driving and you were getting very nauseous and dizzy and as we're going to the Comedy Store.
Because I was going out of my comfort zone that I didn't want to go out of anymore. I can't be that guy no more, that crazy guy in the original. But that crazy guy in the original was the one that said things that, you know, we all got off stage and said, what the fuck just happened? Like, that was not scripted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what happens when you have to follow Paul Mooney and there's 16 people in there, and you better fucking grab them. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to fuck around. If not, you're going to bomb. It's going to be a long night, and you're just going to go up there and learn to bomb every night in front of 16 people. You're going to learn how to bomb. So the only one way to overcome 16 to 20 people is by kicking up the energy a notch. Kicking up the energy a notch makes your heart beat a little bit, takes you to different places,
right.
Makes you work a little bit more racist. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? Oh, no. Oh, yeah, you know, I go off. And it's not, see, it's not racist to me, but it's racist now. Like, now you can't say it.
Right, right.
Like, if I said chick or chink or Hindu now, they just still freeze. You know what I'm saying? Like, last night I called the guy that took the kid down to the cave a chink. And the audience kind of froze, and they came back. You know what I'm saying? Like, they came back. Like, I'm trying shit, but I don't give a fuck. What are you going to do, leave there and write a blog about me saying something? That ship sailed.
Yeah.
That ship sailed.
Let me ask you this. What's the purpose of that, to say that?
The purpose is that's who you are. I'm on a street corner on 78th okay. Street and Kennedy Boulevard. And we're fucking four or five guys and a chick, and we're talking shit about last night. And the way to describe that guy is by saying the fucking Hindu. We went over there and got three little lottery tickets from the Hindu. And, you know, it was a different world. It wasn't mm-hmm. a world of racism that everybody took everything so fucking literal. You know, I was telling the story that I had an Arab friend 50 years ago. First of all, I used to take stolen cars to Joe the Arab up in fucking Nyack, New York. That's the first guy I knew that was Arabian. That's when Arabs were cool. That's when Arabs were cool. Everybody, when there was just one or two of them, everybody loved an Arab, right? You hugged them. You didn't give a fuck if they smelled like hummus. You hugged them. You knew an Arab. You didn't give a fuck. Now they're everywhere, so they're not that special no more. You know what I'm saying? They're just not that special. They're everywhere. Oh. But back in the day, back in the day, that don't mean you're racist.
Right.
Listen. My best friend for 3 years was a guy named Mohammed Zabib. We started out, he was my tutor at the University of Colorado for economics. And we ended up becoming best friends. And he wore the sandals, he had the garb on, the whole fucking thing.
Uh-huh.
I had nothing against him, I loved him to death. I gave a pass to for economics.
Yeah.
It's who he
was
is.
Was this after you got out of?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is after. I didn't have nothing against him, but I always tell people, one of my best friends in the world, I'll never forget him, was Mohammed Zabib. I still remember coming to my house. I still remember him coming to comedy shows in the beginning.
Oh, really?
In the very beginning, and being impressed, like coming, because he was like a ladies' man, Aaron.
Uh-huh. Ladies' man.
He was getting his dick sucked by little white chicks. He was married back in Hinduville, but his mom kept sending him letters to come back, and he's like, I'm not coming back. I'm getting my dick sucked. All these bitches think I'm a yoga teacher. They're sucking dick like it's fucking a yum yum stick. Yeah, because he taught like yoga part time, but he was
oh
just
really?
Yeah, but he was right. Just banging white chicks.
Right.
I knew more about yoga than he yeah. did.
I'm not mad at him.
Yeah, he would just show up with sandals and drop some Hindu right. poetry on him. He would lift the accent up a little bit, the Arabian accent. And the white bitches were crazy over this fucking
I'm sure in Colorado, I'm sure.
Yeah, Mohammed yeah. Zabib, nice yeah. guy. So yeah, it's not that you're saying racist things. It's that you're talking from the heart and you're saying different things. I don't believe in winning the war to lose the battle. I'm not one of those guys.
Right.
In comedy, those assholes, yeah, they're funny on a Monday night, but when it comes time to get a paycheck, you're not going to get a paycheck if you win the war to lose the battle.
Right.
That's it. Yeah, you said something cool. Oh, my God. You're so valiant. But look at the people. What'd you do? You just fucked them up.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hit me with an abortion joke? You're going to kick the fetus of an aborted baby? Wow. That's impressive. You know what I'm saying? All those things? I don't want to hear that stupidity.
Fair enough, Joey Diaz. Fair enough.
Yeah, we do. It's a fucking Monday morning. We can't be dropping bullshit here.
I just wanted you to know that I thought that, and I'm going to just bring it back because whatever, but I thought that that's what I liked about your special is I thought it was challenging. I thought it was hilarious. And I thought at the end, Joey, I fucking teared up because I thought you really showed who you were in an honest way. And it was funny and it was... heartwarming, and it was challenging all in one. It was really fantastic. Really fantastic.
Can you imagine living your life right now when you first got married to the GI? And if you would have had kids with him, And if you would have yearned to be a Canadian,
oh, I know.
Where your heart would have been right now. Right now, you would have been 100 pounds heavier. You would have been wearing sandals. You would have had diabetes too. You would have been living off of fucking Wickrones and God knows what else.
Right.
Maluki you have in you. Because you didn't do what you wanted to do.
Oh, every time, because when you were saying earlier at dinner about when you would get dizzy driving over the hill to go to the Comedy Store, and I was saying, because I do have Crohn's disease, and I was saying, yeah, every time I get sick, it's when I'm doing something that I'm not listening to myself and I'm just bullshitting. You know what I mean? Like I'm participating in something that my body's literally like, and no. And I think everybody has that part. For some people, it's a bad back. You know what I mean? For some people, it's, you know what I mean?
I felt that when I shot the CISO special, it was good, but I didn't let loose.
Mm-hmm.
I held back because I didn't want to give them what they wanted from me. But guess what? Led Zeppelin never goes up there and plays the Rolling Stones.
Right.
The Pretenders never go up there and play Pat Benatar. The Pretenders always the Pretenders and the Rolling Stones. I'm not comparing myself to that. I'm just making a metaphor that I love doing comedy, and I love Red Fox, and I love Richard Pryor, and I love the style of comedy I do. It's who I am. There's nobody that could talk about eating pussy and fingers up your asshole. And it's, you want me to tell you something? A woman told me in Philadelphia, she goes, when you talk about that stuff, it's kind of dirty, but it's kind of erotic. It turns you on in a way. You know what I'm saying?
You know, one woman out of all of them that have seen it so far.
What are you going to do? At least I got one good review. You know what I'm saying?
It's totally teasing.
But no. I like that type of language. I want to fucking be dirty. I want to talk about the shit that bothers me. To go up there and
well,
write
that's
something
who you
that
are.
Doesn't reflect
yeah.
you. Yeah.
Exactly.
Who gives a fuck what they think? And that's it. Like once I took all that safety net away, like, you know what, man? My family will eat. I've been doing this for 27 years. I'm not going to stop eating.
Right.
I'd rather be who I am on stage than be who you want me to be and feed my family. I'd rather be who the fuck I am, take a lower paycheck, and feed my family.
Right.
Than fucking play your fucking songs and do fucking romps and whatever the fuck it is that you like.
Right.
You know, and if you walk out, you walk out, but there's no reason why you should walk out because there's YouTube. There's YouTube. You can YouTube any comic now before you buy a ticket. You don't have to listen to your friends and be a sheep and say, okay, I'll go with you. Hold on one second. Let me go on YouTube. This motherfucker ain't my cup of tea. He's up there talking about kidnapping a dude. How can I go watch somebody who kidnaps a man? So that's the edge we get now.
Right.
Everybody who pays for a ticket is in.
Yeah.
So my main concern was letting them down.
Right.
I don't want to let people down on a comedy show.
No,
you go to
and
a comedy
you're not going
show.
To. Yeah.
No, so you have to work on it. You have to really give them what they want.
Right.
You know what, man?
People just want a real experience, Joey, and that's what you're offering. That's what you
I
offer
wish,
is a
I
real
wish,
experience.
I wish I was. Who used to date Amy Schumer? Good looking guy.
Oh, yeah.
Very good writer.
Anthony
Jeselnik. I wish I could write like Anthony. And I wish I could write like the guy that created Chappelle with Dave. And I wish I could write like John Mulaney. But the fact is I can't. That's just the way it is. That if I did write like them and went up on stage and did what they did, I would just be, it's a slow suicide. It's really
no,
what
it's
it is.
True, but,
it's a slow suicide.
But you are a good writer, for your own way, and that's that you have your own thing, and that's the most important thing. Everyone can learn the trick on how to write a joke. You can take a class like I did. You can learn that trick, but you have to be yourself.
I want to write a joke, tell them my statement, knock them off balance a little bit, and then explain to them from a vine in my life why I made that statement.
And
they
by
look
the
at
way,
it differently.
And that's what you did in the special because you said all that stuff, and then at the end you spoke about your mother. But it, the way it happened, and I'm not kissing your ass because I don't give a fuck. But
no, you're fine.
But the way when you did that is you explained to people this is by just doing that story. This is who I am. This is my experience. You know what I mean? You give yourself permission to talk that way because you. It's real, you know what I mean? And it's accessible to people. You're more accessible to a certain crowd of people than Mulaney is. I never watch a comedy special. I watched yours. I'll watch my friends here and there. But to go through one when you're just flipping channels, but I did land on Mulaney's, and I was like fucking just blown away by it. But that's his different kind of skill. That's his thing. Your thing is just as valuable. It's just different. You know what I mean? Thank God. If we were all like him, everyone would fucking, comedy wouldn't sell any tickets.
Are you adjusting how you do your sets at all? Because even leading up to that, you would do some of the same bits, but your set is different every time you do it. You don't really stick to too much of a set list.
No, especially at the Comedy Store. The Comedy Store, she wanted from the beginning for it to be a creative place. Can you do me a favor and open up the door a little bit quick, Felicia? I'm sorry to bother you. She wanted that place to be a workout room. Somewhere, had a few conversations with people. And again, this is the problem, that you let different things get into your mind and it affects you different ways. I got into different conversations with people and they would say to me, well, the Comedy Store is phenomenal, but I have no place to go work out no more. Why not? Because I got to follow Ron White. And I can't try 5 minutes of new material when I'm following Ron White, Chris D'Elia, Joe Rogan, what's the Amy Wong, Ali Wong.
Ali Wong.
I can't try new material because I'm going to look that bad. And then I figured out, whoa, back to Mitzi Shore 101, back to the book. The original room and the belly room were creative resource rooms. The main room was where you were polished and where she put you up on the weekend. But the purpose of the original room was for everybody to be more creative, to let yourself go, to pull the darkness out of you. When you get really, the people who leave the store, if you talk to people who left the store, I didn't like that place, whatever.
Right.
It's because it does something to you. It goes deeper into your soul. It makes you draw out of your soul. And there's people that can't handle that. That's why they go to the improv. I'm not knocking the improv.
Right.
But the improv is a different type of comic. Over the years, I learned the more I put my soul into my set, the more it didn't really matter what I said. As long as they knew where my heart stood, as long as they knew the compass to where my heart stood, I could say all those racial slurs and talk about eating pussy because they know where your heart is. And that's the most important thing to get out. That takes years.
Oh, yeah, that takes a long time. That takes decades.
That takes storytelling.
Yeah.
It takes some time to take because you become a comedian one day and then I invite you to do a storytelling show and you eat a bag of dicks the first 3 times. Because it's a different animal.
Right.
But once you get the storytelling really strong, now you have this whole thing now. Now your comedy bit has a beginning, a middle, and an ending. In fact, you could even write, what is the message of this joke? And the joke will start flowing out more alive. Right. And it'll come with a story of how you were carrying luck, whatever the fuck it is. Right.
That's the hardest part, is learning your story. And when you're doing comedy, is being able to have a great story and deliver jokes. I think that's the hardest part, is the story sometimes. That's the last piece that you learn.
It's so weird. I went for the low. I was talking to Eddie Bravo once, and he was telling me when he was, before he started getting really good, he would go for ankle locks. And that's like easy pickings.
Right.
In Brazil, when you go for ankle locks, they throw shoes at you on the mat because it means that you're going for the low hanging tree, you know? And my first 18 months of comedy, I gotta be honest with you, it was basically one line that was written and the next 8 minutes were improvised. And because I had to be in front of the same audience every Tuesday, Felicia, and they were all the same type of mutts. They would only come in on Tuesday nights because it was a $15 steak, plus they got a comedy ticket. The steaks were usually like $25. This was the Broker in Boulder in Denver.
Oh, really?
They had 4 of them. Romantic place, great concept. Till this day, I send them my love, and I send them a big shout out for them helping me in my career in the beginning, especially the one in Boulder. I forget who the managers were and the waitresses. I know some of their names, but that was my developmental spot for a year and a half. I went there every Tuesday. I would stay up every Monday night. Sometimes I'd do blow. Some nights I'd stay up on pure open micness, you know, and I would write the jokes for Tuesday out of Boulder's paper. I would take the bold Daily Camera for the whole week. And I would take the front page off and write jokes, topical jokes.
Because this is pre-internet.
This is pre-internet.
I remember you having, like, getting a USA Today, and they used to have this one section where it would be all the little dumbass stories from each state in the USA Today. And so I would go to that because it would have some, like, Florida man story, like, back in the day. But they would do from each state, like, a little blurb of weird crime.
Yes.
That's what I used to use to write jokes.
Yes. So for my first 18 months in comedy, I just used material from the paper to write jokes because they were all Boulder locals. So it wasn't like I didn't have to be fucking Johnny Genius. I would just write local material and then go up there and riff and learn how to improvise. And I got really good at that.
Yeah, that's your specialty.
And then I went to New York and find out that everybody improvises in New York.
Oh, yeah.
7 out of 10 people get on stage and go, how you guys doing tonight? So what do you do for a living? You're a construction guy? You like building? And they just run from there.
No, for sure. Because I remember I was a regular at the Comedy Store till about, I think I moved to New York in like 94. And I was all like, hi, my name is Felicia. And I go to New York, right? And I go into the club. I think it was the comic strip. And then I was like, hey, nah, nah, nah. And they were like, what the fuck is this? And then I was all like, wow, this isn't going to work here. So then it was like, hey, everybody, how's everything? And then I had to that. And for me, even though I had the privilege of being at the Comedy Store for such like 8 or 9 years at the beginning, to me, going to New York is when it switched for me, because the Comedy Store was like my home club. It's a club I started in, really. And so to go to New York, it broke all my bad habits that I had learned at the Comedy Store. It was tremendous, tremendous.
What bad habits did you have from the Comedy Store?
Well, not because I came at the Comedy Store and I was so young. I was like little Felicia at the Comedy Store, like everyone's little pet that they would, you know, rub the top of my head. And I was like, you know what I mean? And I didn't, even though I was really filthy, I didn't stretch who I was. I wasn't curious about anything. And moving to New York made me have to kind of face the person I really want to be. You know what I mean? I know that sounds crazy, but at that time I had done Playboy. So I was just like shedding like layers of me, because it was like, you know, I don't want to wear high heels and suck my gut in and wear a push-up bra to tell fucking jokes anymore. You know, so I did Playboy. Make that go away. You know what I mean? And it was like just peeling layers like an onion, you know?
After you did Playboy, did you change your attire on stage now?
I went through like probably like a year of around Playboy where I dressed up a little bit more because I did the Playboy and they kind of sent me around a little bit then. But then when I moved to New York, that's when it really changed. It really changed, you know? And it was also a whole new bench of comics, you know, at that time. Like Attell and all those, you know, Geraldo, all those people, you know. And so it was just a nice, you know, because you can get stuck in a club. It's like you being at the Comedy Store and deciding to leave right when the whole Rogan thing happened. You just get to where, you know, you got to move out of the house. You know what I mean? It's like you're 19 living at home. So you got to move out of the house for a little while. You know what I mean?
You know, I think the special came out Monday night at midnight. And I did Rogan that afternoon, and I was kind of numb about it. I didn't know what the response would be or whatever. I didn't really care. I just wanted Monday to be over with, you know? And I got up Tuesday morning, and I opened up the computer, and I had 12 messages on the fucking, on Facebook, and I probably had like 11 on Twitter, and the whole Twitter page was covered, and I got up, and I got some coffee, you know? I shook it off a little bit. I got some coffee. And then after I drink my coffee, I wait like 10 minutes and I do my first bong hit. I take a nice little shit. And that's when everything normalizes as I'm smoking. And I take the shit. Everything normalizes. I wash my hands. And sometimes I get a little pot of coffee. And I make another cup of coffee and I drink half of it. And it's 7:15 in the morning. And I went back to Facebook, and there was a message on there from a girl I'd grown up with. They were really tight growing up with. Her boyfriend was a Marine, I remember one time me and her robbed a local pool place, and I threw her over the fence because I couldn't jump fences. So I remember pushing her over the fence and the whole thing. She was a dynamite chick. And she hit me up, and she was like, you know, to see, to open up Netflix and to see you, it means the world to me. Your mother must be really happy and proud of you, whatever. Yeah. And I turned it off, and I did what I was doing, and I walked into the kitchen, and what came to me was leaving Boulder. Leaving Boulder either June 1st or July 1st of 95. Leaving my daughter Jacqueline, leaving a bad relationship, this addiction, this rocky apartment that I had. I kept it. I paid rent for 3 months because I figured I was just going to go to Seattle for a month and come back. But I knew in my heart that if I went and left, that I had to go for it. Like, I had to go for it. I couldn't come back to Boulder beat up 20 years later and say, I went, I gave it a try, but it didn't work out. And at that moment, it hit me what Netflix was. And I walked into my kitchen, and right by the refrigerator, I had a mini heart attack. I just flipped over and put my hands on the counter, and just, it was like 22 years of tears. It was the final load off my shoulder of pain. Like, it was it. Terry came in and asked me what was going on. I said I was thinking about something. And then later on after school, I told her the truth. I said I had a little mini heart attack because I can't believe that I made that decision when I was driving on to Longmont.
Mm-hmm.
I had to catch the 70 through Longmont or whatever. And I remember going, if I do this, I have to do something with my life. I just can't leave Boulder. I'm leaving a great little rocky apartment. I have a job that I could probably make 60, 70 grand a year. I work half the year. I deliver Chinese food. I get cocaine cheap. I get weed cheap. I had everything I wanted to, but I got out of my comfort zone. It was so weird how this all goes back to going out of your comfort zone to become a good comic, and that's what was killing me at the store, that anxiety. Now, I do 90 down Laurel Canyon to get to the comedy store.
Right.
The fucking air sickness, that little fucking sickness I was getting, has disappeared.
Good, because that was fucking annoying.
Yeah, it was fucking annoying. But now to you, you know, this guy tells you to go the fuck away.
Uh-huh.
I remember talking to you the next day or two days later.
It was the best thing he could have ever done, Joey, in hindsight.
Well, no, that, things like that are usually the
for
best
him
thing.
To say,
at the time, you
we don't
to
like
spit
the old
face.
Guys. Yeah, no, you do, but it made me laugh too because it's like, look at this motherfucker. But then it was the best thing that he could have ever done because the truth of the matter is, I should have go away and relearn my craft. And, but, you know, I was a different person too than when I was in my 20s, you know, so. I couldn't even do the material that I had done in my 20s. So I had to relearn how to do everything. And it was the perfect, he said the perfect thing to me, that motherfucker. But he said the perfect thing to me.
And then you started hanging out at the store. I started seeing you down there. You started a podcast called Liars Club with Jessica Wellington.
The Liars Club with Jessica Wellington.
You started lurking down there. You were going down there on Mondays and doing friends and family and all that shit.
Yeah,
and
then
one day you started calling for spots? Or they told
just, you know, do you know Alex? Oh, God. He was in, He's a curly redheaded guy. I'm sorry, I can't remember his last name. But he's a regular, but he was hanging down there. And I was like, you know, sometimes I do the belly room for Tammy Joe. And he was like, well, your name's on the wall. Don't you call in for spots? And I was like, yeah, it doesn't work that way. They told me I was too old. And he's like, who told you? And I'm like, well, Tommy. And he's like, fuck that. That's different people now. Just call in. Just fucking, don't be an asshole. Just call in. Alex Hooper is his name. He's a really great guy. And so I just started calling in, and I didn't get anything. And then I'd get a little discouraged. And Jessica's like, no, just fucking call in. But it was more about just hanging around. And we started our podcast. We'd sneak up into the belly room during the day. And so we did about 15 weeks of sneaking around. And then they're like, you guys can come down now to the podcast bay or whatever. And so it's been a really fun little thing to do. And she's the first person that I've done a podcast since you were. I'm like, this totally fits, you know.
Is it natural?
It's natural. Yeah,
she's a sweet girl.
She's awesome. Yeah,
Carmen Morales is fucking making moves.
Yeah,
she's making moves.
Yeah, they both are. They both are. And Jessica was the first girl door guy at the Comedy Store ever, and
not for nothing, Jessica fuck you up. Like, I wouldn't raise my hand to Jessica.
No,
Jessica's got a right cross. They'll send you to fucking Jupiter. You'll wake up in a hospital in Long Beach because you got no insurance. You know what I'm saying?
I know. I was surprised when she's like, you want to do a podcast? I was like, you talking to me? I was like, okay.
No, it's so crazy. And like, 2009, before I married Terry, I went for a Santeria read, you know, and he was talking to me and he goes, you know, you come into an age where you have to be like a leader in what you do, blah, 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 blah. And I didn't know what the fuck leader. What am I, part of a gang, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it hit me one day that I'm an older guy and the support of the young guys, especially at the store or any comic, has to be overwhelming. When I see the young guys doing their thing, like last night I saw the girl that just got married go up after me. One of the door girls. She married one of the door guys. Real pretty girl.
Oh, right.
He's
right.
A real handsome guy.
Yeah.
They're both like the best looking couple in America.
Oh, she bartend too sometimes?
I think so.
Yeah, she's really beautiful. Yes.
Yeah, she's a knockout. And then, you know, she gave me a big hug. It's weird to see like Jesus Trejo. The little Indian kid I'm taking him to Brea to open up for me as a door guy at the store. You know, there's a system.
Right.
There's a system. People think that there's a system. You know, I see these guys at the store fighting in and out every night for I don't know what the fuck they pay them. If they're comics from time to time, I got an opening, I take them on the road. Why
right.
not?
Yeah.
Give them a shot at what it's like. I can't take them every week, but just to show them.
Right.
You know, the same way Jimmy Schubert took me that time to Jacksonville, the same way that guy took me that time when I needed it, you know, for 3 days. Even though I knocked the socks off, he never called me again, but at least he brought me, you know.
Right.
It's a continuing funnel, and that karma, you know, I took Lee to Boston. You know, Lee wasn't ready for a Wilbur Theater, but I didn't give a fuck. I threw him out there to the wolves, and he handled it. Now it's on.
How was that?
It was great. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And then Mondays at the Fourth Wall in front of 18 people looking at him like he committed
18,
a felony.
9
people like he committed a felony. You know, that's what this fucking journey is all about. I'm happy. When I saw your name last Tuesday or two Tuesdays ago, I had to do that. That's the night that Dimmy and Harry got into the fist fight in the living room, and Harry's nail got stuck in Demi's ear.
Oh, shit.
So I couldn't go down to the store.
Oh, no.
That was one of the greatest lineups.
I know.
That
it was a
ever,
sick.
Yeah. Ever. And you were on it. And
I couldn't believe it.
I was so proud of you.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the sickest lineup.
It was a great lineup.
Ever had.
And I was
Whitney,
the last one on the lineup.
Ron White,
D'Elia,
Bobby,
Allie,
I think David Spade.
It's crazy.
It was just crazy. Yeah. And you were on at 1.
Yeah.
Now, when you're on at 1, what time does that mean you go up?
It can vary. Like, sometimes it's 1, sometimes it's 1:30. But, you know, so what? I'm not complaining. I'm
happy. If it's
1:30,
do you do your time, or do they just let you run?
If there's people there, I think they, you know.
I've seen motherfucking Comics League wait all day to go up at 1:56.
Oh, I know. That's like.
Lee, all day.
Yes.
1:56.
Yes.
Really, Joey? Yeah, go on. Come up to the stage. Lee Syed. You run up there at 1:56 in the morning.
Yeah.
And there's 9 people. And there you are thinking you're at the fucking Garden in front of 18,000 people.
And there's 3 guys wanting to go on after you.
But they know that at 2 o'clock they can't get liquor.
Yeah.
So they just sit there. So sometimes the management goes, nah. But if there's 60 people in there and you're rocking and rolling, they'll keep it open. They'll keep it open, but that's a great feeling.
Yeah.
When somebody says, you want to do 5 and close it out, and you're like, fuck yeah. And you go up there for 8 people. So 1:30 is when you go up?
Sometimes, yeah. But you know, it's been, because I was listening when you were talking all about having nerves and getting dizzy coming over the hill and the nervousness you felt after you did your Netflix thing, because obviously on a tiny level, but being back at the store and doing those 1 o'clock, 1:30 spots, you know, I feel like I'm not letting loose enough, like how you were saying about letting loose and being yourself. You were too confined in your own material. And I feel like maybe I need to do it a couple times to get the feel of the room again. You know, do you ever feel like that if you're away from the original room on the road or whatever and you come back? Does it take a while to find the rhythm of the room again?
Yes and no. Tuesday night, Lee was there, and I had a rough night Tuesday night in the original room. I had a men's amort night. Last night and Tuesday night, I did really well.
Mm-hmm.
The original room has a rhythm, and the rhythm is you got to be a fucking animal. That's the only way I survive in the original room now. I know exactly the buttons I have to press, how high my voice has to be,
mm-hmm.
how there's just so many little things. But if I work on all those little things in the original room, I know that when I go on the road, I'll keep that pace up. That's why I like that pace. Mm-hmm. I'll keep that pace up. I'll take chances. If it doesn't work, I got the coverage for you, bitch.
Right.
Don't worry about it. But I'm going to take this fucking little time off of myself. Last night in the main room, I spoke about something that I never spoke about before. In the main room. In front of 400 people. I didn't give a fuck. In the main room.
Right.
So it's wherever I want to take the conversation now. There's no more set list. There's a set list, but there really isn't.
Right.
There's a set list, but there isn't. It's an invisible line, and I think I work better under those lines, you know. So it works for me. I see what it does when I'm on the road, and I'm really happy. I'm really happy that I'm seeing the teachings of Mitzi Shaw. Everybody took something from that place.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people listen to the podcast and say, when are you guys going to shut up with this shit? Because this is our bloodline, and you guys are in the workforce, and you guys have the same guidelines and stuff. It's just in different terms.
Mm-hmm.
We're all doing the same shit, just trying to be better people, you know?
So exactly, exactly.
That's it. So yeah. How many times a week are you putting out the podcast?
Well, we're doing it once a week now, but we're starting to tape twice a week, so, and we're starting to do a live show with it, so.
You do it at the Ice House?
We've been doing that at the Ice House. We're hoping to do it at the Comedy Store, too. So we'd have some of our comedy friends come on, and we ask them to tell two stories. One is the truth, and one is a lie. Lee's done it, and then we try to figure out which one is a lie. And some of the stories are so fucking hilariously stupid. Some people. But it's been a lot of fun.
And then we're going to Portland.
We're going to go to Portland the weekend after
November
Thanksgiving.
November 29th to December 1st. So.
Yes.
That'll be good. I'm happy you made time for me. I'm happy.
Thank you for having me on.
That you're making things happen. I'm happy that you're part of the comedy sisterhood.
I know.
That we have.
Tell me, what's the best feeling as a comic is driving into the parking lot at the Comedy Store at 9 o'clock at night, right?
And pulling into the back.
Right, and, yeah.
And you know what? It's really weird that we still have the blessing to do it 20 years later.
I know. I feel very fortunate.
Every time I gotta go down, like I said, it's so weird how your contrast and looking at things changes the outlook. If you look at something like it's going to suck, it's going to suck.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really look at something from a perspective of when I think about the Comedy Store now, especially the weeks I don't go on the road, I have a wife and I have a kid and they're great. And I love them to death. But you know what? I got to get the fuck out of there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, no,
and
I
my
agree.
Wife wants me to fuck out of there. There's nights I could tell my wife wants to watch whatever fucking TV with English accents. She don't want me around, you know, her fucking limey TV. She don't want me around.
Limey TV.
Yeah. I go in there and they're drinking tea. I don't know what the fuck they're saying. So I can tell when she wants me out of the fucking house. So.
Limey TV.
You savages English. No, I fucking love you motherfuckers. Anyway. If you're in the neighborhood and you want to check out Felicia, she's at the store now, averaging 3 spots a week like a motherfucker.
If everyone stays out of town.
Yeah, and if not, I'll see you guys will see her with me up in Portland. I think it's November 28th to December 1st or some shit like that. Go to helium.com and check out tickets right now, all right? All right, don't forget, I'm at Gotham's this weekend, but it's sold out. I'm also November 21st. I think I'm at the Improv in Irvine. And there's a few tickets left for that, too. Thank you guys for fucking always having my back. Thank you for watching the special. But before we end this, I got to talk about a few things, all right? Listen, a lot of things happen when you're an asshole. When you wipe it, yeah, you wipe it, but you leave a lot of residue, and that residue develops, and pretty soon you're walking around with a cane. You don't need the aggravation. That's where Tushy.com comes in. It's a portable bidet. You install yourself. It takes less than 10 minutes, and you wash your fucking asshole with nice water, fresh, a la fucking Fresco. You understand me? You don't want them to cut down trees? This is the way to start, by getting a portable bidet, all right? They start as low as $69. Can you imagine showing up in a girl's house, you want to get your pipe sucked? and your asshole smells, you don't need the decoration. And listen, all right, I believe in showers, but sometimes you don't have time to take a shower. You always have time to take a Puerto Rican shower. That's when you put the bidet in, you dip your dick in there, your ball sack, and you do your muffler, you wipe it down with a fucking skin, and at least that area is fucking clean in case you bump into a victim. That's what Tushy does for you, right? They still, why fucking have a fucking muffler if it's not going to be clean? Do yourself a favor. Go to Tushy.com right now and log in the word muffler, M-U-F-F-L-E-R, and get 10% off your motherfucking portable bidet. And like I said, it held Lee's ass for 2 years, and it's still working in my fucking bathroom. It's tip-top Magoo. Nothing's happened, and I believe in the product. That's why they're back. Number two, listen, sometimes you look in the mirror and you're like, I don't look Irish. What do I do, Joey? I don't look Irish. What am I going to do? Listen, I don't know what you're going to do. But I'll tell you what you should start with, 23andMe. 23andMe is a personal genetic service that helps you understand what your DNA can tell you about you and your family story. As your loved ones get together this Thanksgiving, you discover more about your genetic connections that you share. You inherit your what? Maybe your big fucking ears. Maybe you inherit your ears from your uncle or your mom or your stepdad or your dad. Or how much is your DNA compared to your brother or your sisters? This is all important. 23andMe Ancestry Service allows you to see how your DNA breaks out across 150-plus regions worldwide. Trace parts of your ancestry to a specific group or individual from 1,000-plus years ago and discover how much Neanderthal DNA you inherited. All this right now, you get a composition report. You can explore where your DNA is from out of 150 regions worldwide. With 23andMe, you could also get an overview of the diverse group of people who share your DNA. Find other 23andMe customers who share your DNA and ancestors. Explore matches that range from close family to distant relatives to make new connections. You can always choose to opt in or out of this tool. With 23andMe, you share and compare tool. You can explore genetic similarities and differences between you and your relatives. You can share reports with family and friends, even if they're not customers. So what I'm going to do for you is this. Now, through Thanksgiving, as a church soldier, you're going to do yourself a little favor and get a 23andMe Ancestry Service kit for only $49 when you get two of them. They used to be $99 alone. That's 50% off the regular price. That's $99 for two of them this holiday. Order your 23andMe Ancestry Service kit at 23andme.com/church. S-H-U-R-C-H. That's 23andme.com/church. I did it. I found that I'm African, Chinese, Russian, Jewish. I got everything. That's why they call me Mad Flavor. Go to 23andme.com right now, /church, and get your Ancestry Service kit for $49 when you buy two or more kits. All right, listen. You're looking for a good individual for your job, for your business. You got an 8-man business, whatever. But you know what? You also don't have time to be messing around with resumes and services that send you the wrong things. You know what's smart? I'll tell you what. Job sites will overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/church. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. It's a powerful matching technology that scans through thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. You don't get that nowhere else. So you get the qualified candidates you need fast. I don't care whether you have a plumbing business or whether you got a business of 200 more. ZipRecruiter is for you. No more sorting through the wrong resumes. No more waiting for the right candidate to apply. It's no wonder ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, the church family can try ZipRecruiter for free. Listen to me. I just told you. You can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/church. That's C-H-U-R-C-H. That's ZipRecruiter.com/church. C-H-U-R-C-H. Give it a shot. It's the smartest way to hire. I want to thank Felicia Michaels. I want to thank the Christ Killer, Lee Syatt. Most importantly, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank 23andMe. I want to thank ZipRecruiter and Tushy for sponsoring the episode. But you guys have been fucking family to the end. I'll see you guys Thursday morning, ready to rock. I'll see you motherfuckers in New York Thursday night, ready to motherfucking rock. Have a great Monday. Have a great week. Stay black. Don't let nobody fuck with you, all right? Tell them Uncle Joey sent you. Kick that fucking muley.
I wanna be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet. As I sit there applauding from a front row seat, when somebody breaks your heart like you.